No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with George Eliason, live from Donbas, Ukraine, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm George Eliason. Welcome back. We're bringing back a great journalist, one of the great frontline journalists, both her, just the work she's done is just incredible in Syria and now across Donbas. She's been covering the Russian, she's been covering the Russian intervention in Ukraine since it started. Joining us from Donetsk is Eva Karine Bartlett. Thanks for coming back.
Hi, George. Thank you so much, my friend, for having me back on.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry for the misstep there for a second. Let's start out with updating. What's been going on there? What are you seeing now, reporting on?
I'm glad you asked that. I'm just finishing off an article that I'm working on for Covert Action magazine, and it's on the issue of these nefarious, they're known as petal or butterfly mines. Their technical name is PFM-1. They're, I know you know this, George, but for your listeners who might not, as I did not before, these things, they're deployed by munitions. Ukraine is deploying them by rockets filled, they're deployed by artillery is what I meant to say. Ukraine is deploying them by rockets filled with cluster munitions. So according to emergency services here in Donetsk, I was told that each rocket contains 12 cluster munitions, and each cluster contains 26 mines, making a total of over 300 mines in one rocket alone. So since July 28th, Ukraine has been firing on different districts of Donetsk. They began in the west, but by July 30th, I think the date was, it was 9 p.m., there's a loud explosion or a sound there. I'm just checking my notes to double check here. I'm sorry, 1 second. Sorry, folks, I'm just checking to make sure I get the date right. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. Let's say, I think it was July 30th. Ukraine fired in the evening at least one, I think it was two rockets. Air defense intercepted the rockets, and these petal mines fluttered down. Now, they're designed to float, not just to land like a normal like bomb. They're designed to kind of flutter or float down and not exactly explode right away. Sometimes they do, but mostly they land without exploding, and that's the insidious part, is that they're so small that it's very easy to miss them. And Ukraine has rained these down on residential, civilian, non-military areas. So the evening that they were fired on, the very center of Donetsk, not even the periphery, but the very heart of Donetsk, where I was staying, where I am now, but I was in a different location. And people that were on the streets, if they stepped on them, they will lose a foot. Cars were driving over them and having tires blown out. The next day, I went with journalists to an area that was littered with them. And this is like, it sounds incredible, but like locals and or emergency services had moved the mines. You can move them. Well, it's not advised to move them. They're highly dangerous. But some people are courageously moved them. Others use like long sticks with a scoop on the end to move them. They basically moved them onto curbside and then made it some sort of warning marking, whether it was like with an egg carton, or like chalk on the road, or an actual sign saying warning mine, whatever. The point was to draw your eye to the presence of these mines until sappers could properly detonate them. And so even when I was looking at places where the mines had been circled or there's some sort of notice, I couldn't see them. It was incredible. I was like, I don't see them. And they're circled and I still don't see them. So that's me having noticed, right? And these are on pavement. So you'd think they'd be like very easy to spot. They're not easy to spot. Now imagine they're in the grass or you're just not looking to see them. It's very easy to step on them. And as of, I was reading the latest updates, it's at least 39. I think the number is 40 now. Civilians have stepped on them and had their feet blown off. One youth was trying to move one, and it exploded, and he had severe damage to his hands, arms, abdomen, and thighs. A lot of the people that are stepping on them tend to be elderly who don't see them, don't really know any better. One woman, 87-year-old woman that had her foot blown off, was an older woman with dementia who, you know, even if you told her, be careful, she wouldn't have remembered. And she was going out to work in her garden. She stepped on one and had her foot blown off. So, and that's the insidious nature of these mines, is that they aren't designed to kill. They're designed to maim in a grotesque way. And these mines are banned from being used, period, particularly on civilians. Ukraine signed the convention. It has a long name, but it's generally known as the Ottawa Treaty. And Ukraine was supposed to get rid of its 6 million in stock. But from what I could find online, they still have over 3 million. It's almost 3.5 million. And they've been firing them in rockets onto various areas of Donetsk. But not only Donetsk, also Gorlivka, Yasinovatya. And I know in your region, in Lugansk, they were also used. And in my research, so the intense firing, it's on a nearly daily basis since the end of July, the intense firing of munitions with these mines over Donetsk areas started at the end of July, but since like March, according to emergency service and research I've done, they were using it in battles, like in the battle for Mariupol, for example. I know when I was in Rubishny in early May, I was warned, be careful, Ukraine has been using these mines. So that's kind of what I'm really focused on at the moment, because the mines are still around. You know, emergency service has done its utmost to clear them, to detonate them, but the thing is, if it rains, for example, and it did rain a day or two after they were littered all over at the center of Donetsk, then the mines shift. If the mines happen to have landed in trees or rooftops and it's windy as it is today, then the mines shift. So they're an ever present danger here. And it's just, you know, perhaps even more disgusting than the fact that Ukraine has fired them in the first place is that, of course, Western and Ukrainian media are turning around and saying it's Russia doing it, you know, and it's just completely illogical. The people here are ethnic Russians. There are Russian soldiers here as well. What, you know, why would they want to mine their own people? It's completely illogical. Who benefits from this? Ukraine does. Ukraine has been killing the people, the civilians of Donetsk, by other means for over eight years. Why would they not, Donbass, I should say, why would they not use these mines, you know? So that's one thing I'm working on. So August 4th, so Ukraine is, you know, always bombing Donetsk. That's nothing new. There are certain districts that take the brunt of the bombings, like the Kievsky in the north, or Kirovsky in other western districts, also some eastern districts. But the center of Donetsk, it has, of course, been bombed. Notably, for example, the March 14th Tuchka U, the bombing that killed 21 civilians. But I mean, and other times the center has been bombed. But the August 4th, it was really intense because around just after 10 a.m., Ukraine bombed repeatedly, like at least five bombs within 10, 15 minutes. And they were targeting the funeral of a martyred DPR colonel who had been killed the day before. And that funeral was being held at what's known as the Donbass Opera. And that was 200 meters from where I was at the time, at a hotel I was staying at. The people that were at that funeral, thankfully, they took shelter inside the opera in the basement. And meanwhile, I was in a third floor hotel room facing the direction of the bombing. And after the first explosion, I realized, okay, this is after the first few explosions, I realized this is very close. I'm going to get out of this room. Went down to the lobby and was talking with some journalists. Just stepped out of the lobby when the fifth explosion hit, and that blew the glass, the windows open. So, like, thankfully, I had stepped out. Unfortunately, some journalists did suffer a concussion from the force of the blast. One journalist suffered a concussion. Even worse, there was a young woman walking past at the time of that last blast, and her leg was torn off, and she died pretty quickly. Ukraine resumed bombing about an hour and a half later. And by the end of its bombing, I don't know whether the people were killed in the first or the second round of bombings, probably the first. At least six people were killed, including the woman outside the hotel. Tragically, there was a little 11-year-old girl, her grandmother, and her ballet teacher were all killed just two streets away from where I was at the time. So a very central Donetsk area, very pedestrian area that a lot of people walk on, lots of cafes and stuff, playgrounds. And that little girl, it's a really sad story. She was apparently an incredibly talented ballerina and was to go to St. Petersburg to train at a prestigious academy at the end of August. And she had been taking extra lessons with her world famous ballet teacher, who had been a world famous ballerina. And they'd finished the lesson. The grandmother had come to meet the girl, and that's when the bomb fell. And, you know, they were lacerated by the shrapnel. Their bodies were torn apart. And then a man comes and sees his wife and his granddaughter torn in pieces. And, you know, it's just horrific scenes that day. And there was no military targets, you know. They were targeting, almost certainly they were targeting the funeral of a colonel, but that's not a military target. You know, and it is also conceivable that they extended the target to the Donbass Palace Hotel, where it's known that journalists stay there. So that it was a pretty shocking day. I mean, the bombs happen all the time, as you know, but this is like people, I think, feel maybe a relative sense of security in the center, you know, but it was awful. And of course, not a peep about it in Western media. If anything, of course, they will said the usual garbage that Russia did it.
Yeah, exactly. It was the conversation you had with Citizen Journals on the 29th. They asked if you were on location, if you were on scene. And you answered yes on the 30th. And then Louise Minch tweeted, "Hear that, SOF Ukraine, Special Operations Forces Ukraine," which makes the targeting of the hotel probable. And that's something that I wanted to talk to you about today. Mm-hmm. Here's this woman who is part of Ukraine's information operations targeting journalists that are covering the war. Now, whether or not they listened to her and it's a result of it, or they did it on their own, that's an aside. That's what makes it sinister, the fact that this woman would do it at all.
I mean, I know that after Mensch tweeted that, and I saw, I just did a mere retweet saying, like, is that a call for a hit? In any case, I will thank all of those, including especially you, George, who not only came out to support me and call out Mensch for her disgusting sociopathic behavior of essentially calling for me to be assassinated, but you went on to do a really excellent video. Well, you can talk about that, about how she's essentially committed an act of terrorism, if I remember correctly.
Okay, well, it's actually against the laws of war. What she's doing in terms of targeting journalists or civilians, that the laws themselves were written in the Talon Manual. Now, the Talon Manual for Cyber dictates who can be targeted in a war, cyber war, okay, which is inclusive of her tweets, by the way. And this is something people should understand when they're dealing with these people on social media, that it is against the law. If you're looking at the rules themselves, Rule 26 defines belonging to and defines whether you could be targeted or not. The rule defines civilians as off limits unless they're engaged in real war duties, which Mensch is, by the way. Now, this includes undeclared relationships where behavior makes it clear which side the person's fighting for. Virtual online communities and people expressing opinions do not qualify as combatants. Journalists are prohibited targets. Now, this is a clear violation of that, and it actually sets Mensch in the class of a terrorist legally. And laws don't differentiate between cyber and real world attacks like a suicide bomber or somebody crashing an airplane. So it's actually very, very serious. And the fact that she called for it and then it happened within days, you know, right there, it's pretty much open and shut. And that's the position she's put herself in. You could turn around and sue her, you know, for instance, and she really has no grounds to fight back on.
That's very interesting. And I don't know how possible it would be for me to have maybe somebody represent me in a legal case, since I'm not in the US or in North America at all. It might be worth looking into. I'd certainly love to do so, if that is possible from a distance. So I noticed that she on Twitter has kind of tried to change the narrative that, you know, she was unrepentant. A lot of people were calling her out for her, again, sociopathic and just disgusting tweet. But she's now trying to frame it as like, oh, she was calling for the Ukrainian authorities to arrest me. Okay, but even that is ridiculous. Arrest me for what?
You're calling the special operations forces to make an arrest.
Right.
Not quite what they do.
Yeah. So, by the way, just to emphasize, journalists who stay in that hotel, they're not just sitting around. They stay in that hotel because it's central. It has excellent Wi-Fi, which, of course, is a tool we need. But they, you know, I go out during the day, go out to do whatever report might be, like it might be, you know, in Mariupol, might take a whole day. It might be local and closer. It might take less time. And then if that's the case, come back to work. I was working on my computer at the time the bombs commenced. But, you know, it's not the same as journalists in Kiev. Literally doing all the reports from a hotel and never even seeing a front line, you know. So I just want to make that point because I know the trolls on Twitter got active about that. I personally usually stay at a rented flat. I had moved to the hotel for various reasons. I'm now staying in a rented flat again, far cheaper. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so just to clarify those points, like it's not a, even then, even though it is a probably one of the nicer hotels in Donetsk, it's still cheaper than, say, a Canadian motel. It's still, you know, cheaper than your average, the cheapest hotel you could find in Ontario, for example. So I just make that point because I know what people make these assumptions like, oh, well, they're in the hotel. Well, what kind of journalism are they doing? It's also a place where journalists can network and discuss with one another, you know, what they've been doing. So anyway, a variety of things. But the point being, it was a completely residential civilian area that Ukraine targeted. And, you know, these war crimes are just so blatant and brazen. And like, for example, now I'm not on site, but I know you're following the news, too, of Ukraine repeatedly targeting the nuclear power plant in that place whose name I cannot pronounce. And media is claiming Russia is doing it, you know, and Russia's asked for international intervention in this. It's incredibly dangerous, actually. And the media is just so complicit. It's not surprising that they're complicit, but they are so complicit in enabling Ukraine to continue to commit crime after crime.
Yeah, well, exactly. And, you know, here's the thing. Anthony Blinken, you know, after a round of accusations against Russia for attacking the Zaporizhia nuclear plant, Anthony Blinken came out with Russia's using the nuclear power plant as a human shield. Well, how could you be using it as a shield if you're attacking it? Really not sensible. Thanks for the admission, Anthony. A few weeks before, the biggest admission came from Ukraine. And that was they have to get permission to make attacks on infrastructure, any type of missile attack. They're getting permission from the United States. And that makes it that makes Zaporozhye really a crime. At the former head of the NRC is okay. He's fine with Ukraine attacking it. And he's actually blocking the IAEA from going in there or trying to. He's demanding they stay away. And who can believe this is going on in 2022? I mean, this is crazy. If Ukraine does set it off, the best estimate is that it's going to be three times Chernobyl. Three times Chernobyl, whatever that means. Crazy bad, that comes to mind. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, a friend in Makivka, which is just east of Donetsk, he sends me a lot of links, and he was sending me some links about that, and he's like, you know, if Ukraine succeeds in striking that, and it does cause, like you said, three times Chernobyl, we're dead instantly. Like, and of course, facing death is something you do as a journalist in these areas. So that in itself, it's not terrifying to me, but what is terrifying to me is the scale of it. And it horrifies me to think of, these people who've already endured 8 years of terrorism, Ukrainian terrorism, then just being evaporated, or whatever the correct word is for that kind of event.
Well, it would actually be contamination. It wouldn't happen right away. It would be an overdose of contamination, and it would actually be a very death would is takes a while. Radiation sickness is a horror. It's an absolute horror. And the situation's not a nuclear weapon going off. There's not a big mushroom cloud and then, you know, the entire area is fried. All the particles go up in the air, spread out, and they slowly fry, microwave everything, more or less. I mean, that would be the easiest way to describe it. So you're getting that contamination internally by breathing. And that's something that can't be cleared once it happens.
That's horrifying. Well, of course, it's quite very easy to believe that the West, as you were saying, calling the shots, would have no problem whatsoever letting this happen. They're not going to be affected. They don't view the people here as humans. And that's the thrust of it. You know, all this pro-Ukraine, I'm not anti-Ukraine. I'm anti what the Ukrainian government is doing to its own people.
Right.
Whether here exactly. Or in Ukraine itself. But all these people that are just very much ardently pro-Ukraine and refusing to acknowledge the 8+ years of Ukraine's bloody war on the Donbass, refusing to acknowledge Ukraine's criminality against its own citizens within Ukraine proper, I don't know. I guess most people don't realize how Ukrainian, not all Ukrainians, but the fascists, the nationalists, how they don't even view people here as humans. They literally don't view them as humans. So this drives it home even more.
Well, you know, and that's the distinction. The idea that Europe would allow the strikes on the nuke to happen is just crazy because, you know, with Chernobyl, that went right into Europe. You know, the contamination from the plant did. It's going to affect Europe. Now, the fact that, you know, they're okay with it, it's beyond belief because it will affect, you know, the populations of every country there. The United States, well, you have enough distance. So you'll get some radioactive fallout, but, you know, it's probably be absorbable by the environment. Mm-hmm. Now, have you found out anything about the parachute mines that were coming down?
No, I have not. I was trying to find out if I could investigate those, but so far I have not, other than what I've seen in Telegram posts about them.
Okay, someone sent me, you know, pictures of it from their own neighborhood. You know, imagine a mine that, you know, comes down on a parachute from a rocket and blows up 50 meters above your head. So if you're outside at all, you know, they're about to say they're a little bit bigger than the butterfly, well, the petal mines. Mm-hmm. And so a little bit heavier. But, I mean, it's just insidious because all of this is geared for residential areas, business areas, social areas. And that's what makes the whole situation crazy. Ukraine keeps saying that they want Donbass back, and this is what they do. Does this make sense to you?
Well, also, I believe it was 2 or 3 nights ago, Ukraine repeatedly targeted a brewery in not in the center of Donetsk, between Donetsk and Makiivka. And right. I don't know anything about breweries, but anyway, apparently a large amount of ammonia was released. And who knew that? Well, I didn't know that ammonia in that kind of concentration at close proximity can cause a very painful death. So there was like a 2-kilometer radius where it was extremely dangerous to be within that radius. And emergency services were telling people to shut their windows and to breathe through cloths doused with, I'm not sure what the chemical was now at this point. But yeah, that's another. There was a journalist who very courageously, he's a local journalist, and he very courageously went to the site, and he was like saying that that site was struck more than once. So it wasn't just a random, like, one-off, like, hit the site. It was deliberate targeting, probably knowing the outcome.
Well, they've been trying to target ammonia tanks and such. On that particular one, they're estimating about one ton of ammonia gas escaped in the exact area, you know, where it happened. It was absolutely deadly. And they started off in February, trying to light up, ignite ammonia tanks just outside of Donetsk so they could put a cloud right over the city. It would have killed thousands of people. You know, thankfully that they, you know, didn't succeed with that. This is not much better than that. And this is something that Ukraine has been getting away with for 8 years. Go on.
I was just going to say, maybe you could fill in the blanks for me, because this is this is in your region. I was in the Lugansk People's Republic yesterday and went to Severodonetsk, sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. And after going there, the purpose of going there was that city was liberated of Ukrainian forces within the last month. And so, you know, to see life slowly returning, streets being cleared of rubble, the beginning of the cleanup process before rebuilding can happen, to talk to locals. But then after that, I went to an area near Rubishny, but between the two. And maybe this is, I'm sure you know of this event, Ukraine targeted a train carrying some sort of chemicals. And it caused a massive explosion. Like, there's a huge crater where the train track should have been, like, huge. I'm not talking like a crater a person can stand in. It was a very long crater. And, like, probably a modest estimate would be 20 houses around either side of the tracks were just obliterated. Are you aware of that? It was sometime since February. I don't have the date.
Yeah, I was aware of that. That, you know, all through the spring, that's Ukraine spent a lot of shells trying to set off chemicals near Severodonetsk, they actually buried barrels of chemicals and were trying to hit it after they left. I mean, you know, they buried them next to a gas station. They were trying to set them off. I'm not sure what chemicals were on the train, but that's honestly, it's just par.
I found in my notes on my phone. So it was the beginning of April, and that area mm-hmm. is known to have like chemical plants. I guess there was an a plant called Azot, and so the mm-hmm. tanker. Although I don't know what the liquid was, it was said to me in Russian, and I didn't recognize it. But so beginning of April, and of course many civilians would have died in the explosion. You know, another interesting point, George, is also right near that area. We saw a big. It was a grain storage facility that had been mm-hmm. targeted. So you could see like this mound of grain, a lot of which had been burned. And it's just supremely ironic that, you know, this isn't the first time we saw that happen in Mariupol as well. They burned grain. And the world is accusing Russia of depriving Ukraine of exporting grains when it's Ukraine that mined its own ports, Russia that that offered many times over to facilitate demining or a safe route, safe passage through the sea, offered the Mariupol port and has cleared the Mariupol port for safe passage. But, you know, yet the world media and talking heads are blaming Russia for any sort of perceived grain crisis when it's Ukraine that has time and again attacked grain facilities.
Yeah, and they're, every time they leave, that's what they're doing. The assassination of, it was actually a transport, river transport station. They assassinated the owner because they didn't like Zelensky, and they destroyed all the grain. And at the same time, Zelensky was saving Monsanto's grain. You know, and Monsanto, Dow, and another company bought about a third of the grain, a third of the arable fields in Ukraine. We've got to take a quick break, and we'll pick this up right after we get back. This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm your host, George Eliason, and we'll see you in a few minutes.
We're saved. A professor has found the root cause of climate change. And you guessed it, white supremacy. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio. Stay tuned.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Dr. Jacqueline Gill of the University of Maine has now claimed that, quote, the root causes of climate change are capitalism, white supremacy, colonialism. Gill is an associate professor of paleoecology and plant ecology at the University of Maine. If Dr. Gill is correct, the only solution is for the whole world to go Marxist. Yes, that's right. Give up your freedoms, your rights, and listen to the centrally planned economy. But here's the catch. Even if we give up all our freedoms to fight the alleged climate crisis, the weather and climate will not notice. This professor joins two NASA scientists in claiming the same thing, that white supremacy is a driver of climate change. Yes, all a day's work in the wacky world of climate. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
This is it. Your chance to come face to face with a Royal Marines commando. They've set you a mission, so you will need to listen to the following instructions very carefully. Meet at the rendezvous. The Royal Marine Commandos will be there waiting for you. Locate them, talk to them, and learn about what it takes to become a Royal Marines commando. To find out more details about this secret mission, call 0117 926 0233. Got that? 0117 926 0233. However, you should be aware, complete this mission and your future missions will be a lot more challenging. Royal Marine Commandos. 99.99% need not apply.
We need a recalibration of government. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. I'm George Eliason with Eva Bartlett, and we're talking about Ukraine today. Now, why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all the major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk TNT Radio. Eva, you were in Lugansk. Have you caught wind of the mass graves that they're digging up right now?
I actually, if you mean in Rubishny, I saw something about that on Telegram channel just before we started speaking. But no, I haven't researched. I haven't had a chance to visit or do any reading on it. But what I will say is that I was in Rubishny at the beginning of May, just mm-hmm. for part of the day. And at the time, Anna Soroka, she's a deputy prime minister, correct? Or you can correct me on that. She was present.
She's a special advisor now. She was the deputy foreign minister, but
foreign
she's the advisor to the head of the government, Lena Posichnik.
She's an incredibly knowledgeable woman. And anyway, she was speaking about the fact, like, when we were there, I was with a very small, like, three or four other journalists. They were saying, first of all, like, Ukrainian forces were a kilometer and a half away. We saw mostly elderly people that were housing, sheltering in a school in the basement. And also while there, we spoke with some local people that were talking about how they were just removing bodies from the streets, people that were killed by Ukrainian shelling. And the number there, I mean, this is not the mass grave, but it's kind of connected to Rubishny. But at the time, they were just saying, like, I think it was 60 they'd recovered in that day alone. And anyway, please go ahead. Sorry, it's kind of a segue.
No, well, it's important because, you know, it's continual. Here's the thing, folks. If this was just one event or another, Ukraine could pass it off. Well, this is, you know, collateral damage. You know, it's too bad these people were there. And, you know, we're sorry about it. But this is on a daily basis all over the place. And it's still going on at the front everywhere they can. To put something as insidious as the petal mines, you know, at children's playgrounds, it tells you a lot about the mentality of the people. Right now, they've just dug up another mass grave, and so far, the count on the victims is over 100. And it's just crazy. Two of the first victims they pulled out were a 4 and 5 year old brother and sister.
Wow.
And, you know, that's from attacking apartment complexes instead of military formations. And Ukraine is set on getting the highest death toll they can across Donbas, you know, which is a shame. It's what you brought up earlier, that they look at them as subhuman.
I mean, you've already visited mass graves in the past. I know I've seen you in a documentary also with Anna Soroka, where you're standing in one and you're talking about how some of the bodies were decapitated.
Yeah, there were actually 5 heads in a bag that were buried. If you want to you know, see something that's going to ruin your day, that would be about it. Because these people were buried that way. And in when you can divide the battlefield, if you go north, LNR on the front lines, that was all Pravi sector. With Pravi sector, all through that time period, was the Syrian ISIS regulars that came in to help them. And this is what they were doing to people. And to just, you know, be there and, you know, that reality hits you in the face. You know, you have, and I'd been to, gosh, that was the 4th mass grave that I was covering. And it just doesn't, it just, the reality of it, because these are people. You know, there are some soldiers, but Most of these are people trying to live their lives, and this happens to them. And it's hard to get over that fact sometimes. You know, you get a little hard to it, but, you know, a situation like that with the decapitations just totally floored me for a few minutes, because it's going way outside what's normal, even in a war situation.
Yeah, and, you know, and it's well documented. I don't know if any of these fake human rights groups have bothered to touch the issue, but you've certainly, as you said, you visited four, did you say? Like, that's, and I can only imagine how many more of these mass graves there are. But, you know, you'll recall that earlier this year, in the media frenzy of disgusting and transparent propaganda against Russia and the Donbass, they were claiming there's a mass grave near Mariupol, and it turned out it was just a cemetery, you know. But you've actually seen these mass graves, and the media just won't touch it, of course. And I know, Black people should not be surprised that Western corporate media, which is doing, you know, the interest, it's bowing to the interests of the military-industrial complex and the people, the corporations that own it. Of course, they're not going to touch it, but it just like it's so infuriating. Because you're speaking about it, you're writing about it, but because they have such money to blast the public, you know, with their message, which is just lies and manufactured stories, you know, your truth, it's very hard to get out to the mass, you know, the majority of people. And it's and like you're saying, these are people, these are normal civilians, a 4 and 5 year old kid, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like this, and you know, I think one other thing I'm afraid to say, but like, I hope I don't mean this to say this to be insulting to any listeners, but I feel like there's people just don't grasp. You know, we talk about these things, and you've seen many dead bodies. I've seen many dead bodies. But every time I see them, it still impacts me. I'm not desensitized. You have to suck it up and keep your composure at the time. But it does hit me, you know? And I just feel like people have been, who are not anywhere near a conflict, have been desensitized to the point where it means nothing when they hear about it, you know? And it's just, it's pretty sad.
Well, you know, I get your point exactly. And it doesn't help that, you know, this media war, the info war, when you get to scale at this size, they're literally paying at least $100 million a year for it. That's the actual payout. You know, it could be as high as, you know, $150, $200 million a year. And that's the cost of info war. So, you know, when you're publishing stories and you're telling the news and you're laying out the evidence and the facts, and hey, here's a video, we're here right now, live, look at this. You're fighting, you know, people that are playing at $100 million a year. Zelensky's Twitter account is $50,000 a month just for Twitter. I mean, that's just how crazy it is.
Yeah. That is absolutely crazy.
Now, how long are you going to be in Donetsk this time around?
Well, actually, I've been here around 3 weeks, and I would stay on indefinitely. I would stay on indefinitely, but I do have my two beautiful dogs back at home, and the person taking care of them can't do so for much longer. So I'm going to have to leave here soon. But I'll come back. I'll go back and take care of the dogs for a while and see if I can figure out another dog care situation, come back.
I think another thing that people don't realize is, you know, you talk about a war-torn area. They don't realize how educated people are in Donbass and that they were, you know, it was actually the University of Donbass that led research in Ukraine. Rocket science, anyone? Engineering, you know, you name it in the sciences or medicine. It was in Donbass. It's from the times of the Soviets onward. And so you've got that background in society here. So even though that, you know, you have a lot of rural areas where you have farmers, you go into the cities and you have some of the, you know, you have world-class educational institutions and thinkers today that are, you know, forced into the situation. Now, we've got 3 minutes left. Oh, we've got 2 minutes left to the news. Now, what are your impressions inside the city itself? People's attitudes, have they changed since the last time you've been here? Are they the same? Are they determined, hopeful? Where are they at right now?
Well, so I've, as you said, I have been coming back and forth since March. So I was here last, before this visit, I was here in June, and I think I left in early July. People, I mean, the thing is, people are, they've endured this for 8+ years. And for example, the day after the petal mines, the July 30th petal mines on Central Donetsk were delivered, I went with a couple of journalists to the one area that had been heavily hit with the petal mines. And so later we met a woman who was like a shopkeeper and asked if she minded speaking to us. And she was your example of totally resolute and stoic. She was like, we will not be defeated. We will not be defeated. Mm-hmm. You know, they've done nothing wrong here. The people here are not the issue. The issue is the government of Ukraine and the fascists within the country, the people here.
Exactly.
You know, when you have a just cause, then you don't have, I mean, you have fear of the bombs, but at the same time, they know they're not in the wrong here. They're just trying to exist. And her courage was actually really inspiring.
Eva, thank you for coming today. I'd love to have you back soon.
Thanks, George.